Hello, and welcome back to DebtWired. I'm your host, Amelia Weitzman, and I cover direct lending at DebtWire Europe. In this episode, you will hear from Peter Darlin, who is Global Co-Head of Leverage Finance at Clifford Chance. Peter has been a partner since 2013 and regularly advises corporate borrowers across leverage finance, private credit, and restructuring deals. We'll hear his summary of market conditions this year so far, his expectations for the months ahead, and crucially, his perception of risk in the current debt environment. To kick off, Peter, as we head into August and are firmly in Q3, how would you summarise the landscape of the M&A and debt markets in the UK and Europe so far this year?
I think if you start back in January, it started slightly tentative for the first couple of weeks, and then everyone was waiting to see with slightly bated breath. And then we saw an absolute explosion of repricings across the leverage finance market with a relatively active high yield market as well. So I think the rest of Q1 and Q2 have been characterized by the same strong availability of debt and liquidity in the debt markets. What hasn't quite matched it is the flow in the M&A market. So we have seen a continued pressure on pricing downwards for the attractive deals, a lot of private credit transactions being repriced in the more liquid and cheaper syndicated market, all facilitating M&A transactions, but not necessarily seen a marked uptick in M&A until a slight softening and more movement over the last month or two, post-Easter, basically.
And I have to ask, how do you feel the market has reacted to the recent change in UK government, if at all?
I was going to say it's probably more towards the if at all end of the spectrum, in the sense that I don't think the syndicated market, in terms of, we don't really see that type of rapid price movement based on any particular government. In terms of policy impact on specific sectors or where private equity may or may not invest, I think it's too early to tell. And even the deals we've been doing, we had a transaction sign over the weekend in connection with the French election. It doesn't necessarily change terms. Sometimes people prefer to sign documents on the Monday once the election outcome is known, as opposed to the Friday. But it doesn't fundamentally change what we do necessarily. I think it's more of a longer term play in terms of what's the view on private education. Will people invest in that if there is subject to VAT? It's more slightly more longer term trends than that, I think.
Sticking with longer term, what developments do you expect to see in the next 6 months? Do you expect the M&A market to loosen up?
So far, we have early signs of a thaw in a frozen M&A market. Our M&A team, I think it's been a steady increase in terms of sell-side processes, the type of deals that are coming to market, and the type of processes that people are and vendors are willing to put into the market. Some of which are in the public domain and some of which are not. But I think generally speaking, it's more, we can see active competitive auctions processes for very large assets where we haven't seen that for a couple of years now. In the mid-market, there's continued to be activity. In the infra market, it's been active all along. But I think increasingly we are starting to see the big private equity funds starting to actively prepare and engage in disposal processes in a way that hasn't been the case for a while. Whether that translates into an absolute explosion in M&A volume in Q3 and Q4, I think that remains TBC. And we obviously have the US election, which even if it doesn't necessarily impact availability of businesses in Europe in the short term, it still tend to impact the sentiment in the market and drive slight hesitation whenever we run into the US elections.
So perhaps there'll be more of an impact from US politics than there has been in Europe.
Possibly. I mean, you never know. It's more based on experience that whenever we see the US election coming up, whether it's now 4 years ago or 8 years ago, it tends to cause a slight pause in the markets, not because of stuff that is directly relevant to the European market, the European companies, but more the general sentiment around risk willingness in underwriting banks to credit fund. It's just everybody pauses slightly, would be my anecdotal experience.
And what would you say has been the biggest change in documentation in recent years?
Surprisingly little, if you're being cynical about it, in that if we look at the syndicated market that came back the first half of this year with a roar. I think we weren't quite sure what sort of terms would clear the market after a two-year hiatus compared to the deals that syndicated during the summer of 21, back end of 21, before the Ukraine situation. And I think what we found is that the market picked up pretty much where it left off, and the terms that's come through the market in the last 6 months have been quite strong on the syndicated side, as in very borrower-friendly, combined with very tight pricing. I think that what has changed in the intervening 2 years, is the extent to which the private credit has been willing to step up and essentially compete head-to-head on the same type of documentation terms, which wasn't the case 2 years ago. And it now provides a completely different alternative to the syndicated market on, broadly speaking, equivalent documentation terms, subject to some differential on pricing. And that creates a completely different dynamic. And for some assets, you also have the high yield market, again, on broadly equivalent documentation terms. And for some assets, also an infrastructure finance market, that you could end up with three or four options that are very credible head to head. And that, if you are a debt provider, that inevitably forces you to cut price at some point to win deals.
Speaking of syndication, your team recently advised EQT on its acquisition of a Spanish university platform. How was that deal to execute?
So on that one, we advised the EQT's underwriters, so the lenders to EQT. It was an interesting process in terms of the speed at which that syndicated on, again, strong documentation terms and pricing terms that came out very tight. It's an example of the dynamic in the market of the last 6 months, and I think particularly in the run-up to the sort of up to midsummer.
Are you anticipating any new policies that will impact the private credit market in the next few months?
Not in the next few months, but I think what will be interesting to see is the extent to which private credit or syndicated lending remains outside of regulatory scrutiny. So far, that's been the case, but we are aware of more noise around the leveraged finance market generally in terms of central bank interest and regulatory interest in terms of the risk contained in the system. And that discussion has come and gone over the years, but now it's back again. But so far, there hasn't been regulation of the leveraged market, and I don't think there's anything in the short term that I would expect to happen to the private credit market either.
On the topic of risk, do you think there needs to be more transparency and, in your words, scrutiny of the market, given its size currently?
It's an interesting question. I don't think it is a marketplace that requires regulation in terms of being a functioning market with a sufficient degree of transparency between professional counterparties. So in that sense, I don't see any need for regulation. Whether if you take a very big picture perspective from a national economic perspective, the idea that you have investors willing to put capital at risk through credit, whether that's syndicated credit, private credit, or other forms of credit, and is the market a functioning vehicle to achieve that transmission of risk from those who want to take risk to those who need capital to borrowers, basically. I think it's as efficient as you can expect it to be in the circumstances. So I don't really see it as a regulated market space in order to protect, for example, consumers. And I think the private credit space and CLOs arguably should be less prone to systemic risk compared to leveraged loans sitting in the balance sheet of banks, who have a completely different role in the financial system.
Could you explain why?
It goes back to the idea that most private credit funds or CLOs investing in the syndicated market is comprised with capital from investors who want to take syndicated leveraged loan risk, whereas shareholders in JP Morgan don't necessarily expect them to do that. And the regulator tend to punish an investment bank for holding too much risky debt on their balance sheet, because their role is not to hold debt, it's to facilitate transactions. So there's a distinction between the two. So in a theoretical sense, private credit providers, CLOs, similar type investors should by definition be willing to hold risky assets. As a definitional, it basically should be a clear-cut case in terms of systemic risk.
What to your mind is the most exciting or attractive element of the debt market at the moment from a legal perspective?
I hesitate to use the word exciting in the context of legal stuff, but I think what is slightly fascinating is the degree to which the product, what used to be very distinct and different market, are starting to migrate and merge increasingly. And it poses challenges for us as external advisors, but it, I think it also creates a degree of competition around credit at a certain price point that didn't used to exist, which is fascinating. Whether that's going to change the market dynamic in terms of suppliers of that credit, whether it will change the role of investment banks or who is the takers of that risk, TBC. We haven't had it to that degree in the European market before, and that it would be fascinating to see where it goes.
And last question for you, Peter. We've seen a lot of shifts in London law firms at the moment, lots of different people moves. What do you think this is a symptom of?
I was going to say it's a bit like the Premier League silly season, which I can't remember exactly when it is. I think it's usually in July, August, but I can't escape a sense of that in the sense that rather than moving between Premier League seasons, we're moving between economic cycles with one sort of coming a little bit too close in the run-up to the Ukraine situation. And now we sort of have had a couple of years of subdued economic activity and there's a lot of activity getting ready for the next one. That would be one answer. I think there's also a question of different firms taking different views in their willingness to invest in different product areas and different time horizons in terms of those investments. There's no one answer for why these moves are happening, but a number of contributing factors.
Thank you. Well, unfortunately, that's all we have time for in this episode. Thank you, Peter, for being on the show and sharing your insight with us. And thank you to our listeners. If you've missed any episodes, please visit iTunes or Apple Podcasts to catch up on DebtWired. Bye for now.